This is the Davis and Beadle Podcast.
Hello, hope you had a great Thanksgiving weekend. Time for the Davis and Beadle Podcast. Jim and Curtis Beadle, how are you, sir?
Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing fine. So, how much did you fill yourself up on turkey stuffing and Coors Light during Thanksgiving to the point where was it a sweatpants Thursday and a black sweatpants Black Friday for Beadle?
Went pretty heavy. Yeah, I went pretty heavy on everything. I skipped Coors Light. I went straight for the regular Coors
because okay.
You go and go big, right?
Okay, very good. That shows a maturing Beadle that I know that you know, for Coors Light just for kids. Yeah, it's you go the banquet beer, you go the Sam Elliott full blown.
If you're just doing some easy drinking, you know, then Coors Light, that's the way to go. But I mean, it was a holiday, Jim. You got to put on the big boy pants.
That's true. That's true. And I was so thankful years ago, two or three years ago, my wife, she said, hey, they have these things called express jeans and they're kind of stretchy and I love them, to be quite honest. They're fantastic, man. They're the perfect Thanksgiving pants. They look like normal jeans, but man, but they've got some
is out the window.
They've got some give, and they're beautiful, man. They're fantastic.
I could have used them on Thursday last week.
So. Yeah. I was right there with you, brother. I was right there with you. So, let's talk some college football. Let's talk college coaching carousel with Lincoln Riley going to USC. I mean, they did ask him if he was going to LSU and he said, no, nobody asked him about going to USC because, well, Brian Kelly's going to go to LSU, leaving Notre Dame. It's a crazy world right now, man, with college football and now, you know, Lincoln Riley's going there. I personally, we debated on the local show today, Buckeye boy. Oh, by the way, I should mention congratulations to our Buckeye boy in his impending nuptials in 2022. Finally, finally wore his girlfriend Karen down. She's like, okay, all right, I'll do it. So congratulations to our little Buckeye boy. He's all grown up now, going to get married.
Does that mean that he gets to move on to be the Buckeye man now?
No, we have both agreed. he could be 85 years old and he'll still be the Buckeye boy. That will never change. That is going to stay.
He's stuck with it.
Yeah. That name is going to stay with him. That moniker is his forever. He'll never become the Buckeye man. It's not going to happen. But anyway, congratulations to him, though. I mean, it was not a surprise because he'd been kind of telling me that was going to happen. But we're thrilled for him. The continued
pretty cool.
Maturation of our little buddy.
Doesn't seem possible to me. I haven't been hanging with him, though, for you know, quite some time now. So this, you know, doesn't seem possible in my world because, you know, the guy I know just,
there was no way. There's no way it was going to happen. there was no way you were ever going to see that happen with him. But we're debating the whole Lincoln Riley going to USC situation. And I said, look, this is a huge get for them. He's been able to recruit all across the country when he's at Oklahoma. He supported the move to the SEC. What's he supposed to do when he's at Oklahoma? Tell them what he probably really felt. Oh, great. We're going to go there and probably never have much of a legitimate shot at getting to the college football playoffs. Maybe once every 3 or 4 years, we might have that opportunity. So like I've said, sometimes it's better to rule in hell than to serve in heaven. In this case, Pac-12, he's got a chance to go there and take SC to being the number one program in that conference, to being a perennial college football contender, while the SEC, it's great, best conference of college football, all that stuff. But the reality is it's going to be tough to break through playing in the SEC, getting to that title game every year, having a chance at college football playoffs. At USC, he's going to have resources. Recruiting is, you know, certainly, you know, they have to fix some things right now, and it's not going to be a quick fix. This is not a turnkey situation at USC, but give it 2-3 years, and that's a program that could be a perennial college football playoff contender, which is what he wants. That's the place he wants to be. The obstacles there are very small when it comes to, I mean, Oregon, you know, okay, Oregon right now, Oregon State occasionally, Oregon State had a really good year, you know, Arizona State once in a while, you get some schools that kind of step up and, you know, and rise up a little bit in the Pac-12. We've even seen Colorado do that on occasion. But for the most part, they've got the resources there to be the best program in that conference and be a perennial contender for the playoffs every single year.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's interesting to me because there's two sides to this coin, right? There's what you're talking about, which is, you know, coaches are always looking for the best resources, the best place that they can build their program, that they can recruit to, you know, can be a top contender in the conference every year. And I think that's true. Like when you look at, I mean, Texas has to be wondering, like, oh man, should we have really gone to the SEC here?
Yeah,
in a couple of years, because things aren't going very well at Texas.
Yeah, should we have hired Sark? I mean, there's a lot of second guessing going on right now.
To me, that exposes the other side of the coin, which is it's still hard, no matter what your situation is, no matter the resources. Texas is the best example. They have all the resources in the world. They can't get it done, at least not lately. USC has all the resources in the world and haven't been able to get it done since Pete Carroll left. You know, what has to happen for all these coaches is they have to have the resources and they have to have the ability to kind of have that support to build their program. And things are so quick moving in college football now. I think it's harder and harder every year for a lot of these coaches, and things are changing so quickly with the player side of things as well. But with nil deals and the transfer portal and stuff like that, you can do things quickly. And the problem with that is you can fall apart quickly too. You know, you can really build a program quickly and it can disappear on you real quick too. So it's really hard to be super consistent the way Lincoln Riley has at OU, the way that obviously Nick Saban has, you know, the way for the most part that Dabo Swinney has until this year, and they're still solid, but they're just not as good as they were in the last couple of years. Those types of programs though, when you look around, that's what everybody wants. But it's really hard to maintain. So is he the guy that can do that? Well, he did it at Oklahoma. They've been pretty good under his watch. I know that they haven't quite broken through for the national championship and stuff like that, but they've been a perennial top 10 team for his tenure there. So does USC get him over the top? Does he have more ability there? Hard to say. I mean, Oklahoma's Oklahoma. You're going to be recruiting the same type of athlete.
Right.
Do they come to USC before they come to Oklahoma if the programs are on the same level as far as, you know, success and stuff like that? Well, historically, that answer has been yes. The recruits do want to go to places like Los Angeles and be part of that program and the long history of it and stuff like that. And have the ability to market themselves, especially now that they can market themselves and make money on that deal. So those are the questions. You got all the distractions of LA versus Norman as well. So those are things that are, you know, I think part of the deal with USC, but I think the biggest thing is college football has changed so vastly in the last few years, and it's really starting to consume its not from a product perspective, but from a moralistic kind of perspective. You wouldn't have seen these coaching moves before bowl season before.
No.
And that's what's hard to swallow with this.
Yeah, we'll get to Brian Kelly in a moment, because that's a whole different kind of douchebaggery that's going on with Brian Kelly, and we'll get to that coming up in a minute. But I just think in the case of Lincoln Riley, young offensive mind, goes to USC. There's not a lot in front of him in terms of programs that are going to year in and year out make it tough for him to get to the college football playoffs, particularly if the Pac-12 gets a guaranteed spot in the college football playoffs with expansion. And that's certainly, you know, at the offing going down the road, that, you know, that becomes a far more attractive situation than trying to get out of the SEC. And battling, you know, in that conference week in and week out. So I just think for the most part, it's look, Colorado had their chance the last couple of years with USC, and I don't know if that's going to come around again anytime soon, regardless who's coaching the Buffaloes. Now, we got to talk about Brian Kelly, because Brian Kelly, who, according to many reports, he talked to Notre Dame today. The conversation lasted less than 2 minutes. He turned around and walked out, did not take a single question from any of his players. That's a special kind of douchebag right there. That you guys, your kids you recruited, your team could very well end up in the college football playoffs. There's a decent chance of that happening. And this is how you treat your kids? Kids you recruited to go to Notre Dame? If I hear these things and I'm a parent of an LSU, you know, potential LSU recruit, I don't know if I want my kid to go play at LSU for him. I really don't. I mean, you hear the stories that Matt LaFleur, Robert Saleh, you know, two guys that are NFL coaches, they were grad assistants for him when he was at Central Michigan. They thought they were invited to a party at his house. Instead, Brian Kelly had them shoveling snow. This is the kind of stuff you hear about Brian Kelly, the young man that died on the scaffolding when they were filming. They wouldn't let him come down. Brian Kelly has been the model of consistency in terms of winning and losing at Notre Dame. No doubt about what he's done there to get that program back to being, you know, a nationally relevant program, a team that's made the college football playoffs. But man, when you hear these other things about him, Beadle, you know, that just make you go, what an ass. What an unlikable guy. How do you do that to your kids at Notre Dame? If that is true about that lasted 2 minutes, good luck with that, LSU. Have fun with that guy.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I think the if that is true part is important, not just because you're, you know, throwing doubt on it, but it's just the way things are in the world of Twitter and reports and who's controlling all that information right now. If you're Notre Dame and you want to save face and look like the good guy in this whole
deal, you want that stuff to come out. Absolutely, you do.
You're going to push that stuff out pretty hard and come up with as many of those things. But the truth is, Brian Kelly's a weird dude. He has been for as long as he's been in the spotlight. I mean, he's been
never been a fan. Respect the consistency, but I've never been a fan of him.
Yeah. He's always produced. He was at Cincinnati and they, you know, kind of got that program going. He was at Central Michigan, as you mentioned. That was a short time, but he definitely helped improve that program. I think he was at Grand Valley State Division II originally and got them, you know, on the map. And so he's been consistent and he's been good as far as the production everywhere he goes. But I've never heard, like, you never hear a real lovable story about that guy. It's always just weirdness, whether it's douchery, like you just mentioned, or just odd things. Like, what was the one he came up with earlier this year when he said, I can't remember, he used some saying after a big win earlier this year, and everybody was just like, that was odd, like such a weird thing to say. He's just never come off as a real
human being
personality. Yeah. But
you're referring to the execution joke.
Yeah.
He was trying to do his own little spin on the classic John McKay,
funny.
You know, execution joke. And he butchered it horrifically.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just dumb, and, you know, like I said, just didn't come off as funny, likable, or even just very personable. But, you know, in the end, I don't think university presidents and ADs care as long as you put a product out on the field that will make them money, and that's the truth, and that's the truth of college football now, and it stinks because your want is for all these programs to still have some sort of amateurism. You know, we just work harder than the other teams kind of feeling about them. And it's not true. It hasn't been true for many, many years, but it's just now being like accepted regularly as this is how things work. And he fits into that mold just perfectly. And LSU has, you know, they've got to keep pace as far as the SEC is concerned. So they're going to go with a guy that obviously has produced, you know. Who could be better for LSU than Ed Orgeron, right? Now,
sure,
lots of reports about the buffoonery that's gone on with him too. But
he's turned into a total jackass too.
But who could be more perfect for that place, right? Like, yeah. You think it would be easy for them to say, we're giving this guy as much chance as he needs. That didn't happen. They dropped him like a hot rock. So,
well, when you hit on one of the LSU administrators' pregnant wives, you know, his wife at a gas station, and she even said, you know, I'm married to so-and-so. And he's like, yeah, I don't care.
Yeah, he was bringing girlfriends to practice and stuff and their kids. And, I don't know. Think of some of the ridiculous things that have gone on in college athletics this year. Not just this year, but there's been some pretty ridiculous tabloidish headlines and things like that. You know, the monkey stripper thing in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
The Ed Orgeron bringing girlfriends and their kids to practice and just all this stuff going on that you never heard about before. And it probably happened, but you didn't hear about it because it was a collegiate atmosphere, air quotes around collegiate.
Yeah.
When you thought about that stuff, they protected those coaches and those stories from coming out because they didn't want to bust up their reputation as a place of higher learning or a place of education or a molder of young people. They don't care anymore. They just don't care. They want the headlines. They want the action. They want the money that comes along with that and the attention that comes along with that. It's not scaring away recruits. It's not scaring away donors. They don't care. So
they don't. You're so right.
College football's completely changed. So
all for the worse. I mean, I still love college football. It'll always have a special place in my heart, but when, you know, like, and some of this goes back to even with Nick Saban, you know, the Dolphins situation, and no, I'm not taking the Alabama job, and there he was the next day in Tuscaloosa taking the Alabama job. I mean, Lincoln Riley, I'll be a Sooner for life, and well, if you love Oklahoma so much, then why are you leaving to go to USC? If you love it that much, that's the thing. It's all about business. It's nothing to do with any loyalty or anything like that. And I'm not on my soapbox, you know, railing on something that's brand new and, ooh, this is shocking and new. No, it's just another sad example. Like Brian Kelly, you owe it to those young men at Notre Dame to at least give them an hour of your time to say, hey, this is why I'm doing this. I'm here to answer your questions. I understand you guys are confused and understand why I'm doing this at this point. He owed that to them. And that's why I don't get my panties in a wad about name, image, likeness, players looking to make money, because why shouldn't they? Why shouldn't they be looking to make money when you've got Brian Kelly, who's going to be making more than 26 of 32 NFL coaches now that he's at LSU. Yeah. He's going to make, I mean, and some people are like, why doesn't everybody want to go coach in the NFL? Why, you know, because you can make more money coaching college football, dummy.
Yeah.
And
you're
so
you're never out of a job.
Yeah. And so when you look at those kind of numbers, you're like, well, yeah, duh. No wonder he wants to, you know, has no interest in coaching the NFL and things like that. It's just sad. And, you know, I feel bad for the players at Notre Dame. If all those things are true, there's multiple sources that say that that's how he handled himself today, that he gave them less than 2 minutes of his time and then on to the next gig. And so there we go. All right. Do want to talk about the Broncos, the schizophrenic, just impossible to figure out Denver Broncos, who are now 6-5, coming off a great defensive performance, Patrick Surtain Jr., 2 picks, one of those a pick 6. Broncos ran the ball well, did a great job of forcing, as I mentioned, the 2 turnovers by Justin Herbert in that game that the Patrick Surtain, the second was a beneficiary of. It's just maddening to watch this team because they go to Dallas, handle Dallas on both sides of the football, play like, you know, garbage in the fourth quarter, and at times didn't play great against Philadelphia, but that was still a game that was well within reach at the end of the third quarter until the Darius Slay fumble recovery, Gordon coughs it up and Teddy makes his business decision in that game. But then let's give Teddy credit for what he did on Sunday. Shin injury during that game. Drew Lock comes in. Drew Lock does what Drew Lock does best, find the opposing color and throw it to them. And unfortunately, Teddy came back in. We, on our local show, a guy that listened to us when you were in town, we were doing the show, Middle School Mike, going on and on about how Drew Lock needs to be playing. And Teddy Bridgewater should not be this team's starting quarterback. And I do not look. Do I think Teddy Bridgewater is the ultimate answer at quarterback for this team? No, I think as much as I'm not, you know, not a huge fan of Aaron Rodgers these days, and you know, and I do like Russell Wilson, but you know, both those guys are a little bit long in the tooth. I would still take either one of those guys right now over what Denver has, but you're going to take Drew Lock over Teddy Bridgewater right now? Please. I do not want to hear it. I don't want to hear that. That is ridiculous.
It's really interesting to, I was watching the broadcast on my phone and then had it on the radio as well. Just was running around doing errands. So, you know, kids had the phone watching it and I had the radio on in the car. And to listen to Dave Logan and how they talked about Drew Lock when he came in just tells you all you need to know. Like, nobody close to that organization thinks he's the guy. So it was already a little bit suspect when he had to come in, and then the interception happened.
Which is a stupid throw. Like,
well, there's your answer, folks. You know, and these are the team's broadcast.
Yeah,
guys,
I mean, Logan's comment. Yeah, Logan's comment on the pick was hilarious. It was just, yep, that was a really dumb throw. I mean, and it was just, but there wasn't a hint of, I was surprised, or right. It was just like, yep, that's what he does.
There it is. Yeah. So, I mean, the craziest part about the Broncos is, like you said, they're just so schizophrenic, and one half, they did it pretty much solely by defense. Well, they pretty much dominated defensively that whole game. They had a great day, but really the first half, I mean, they just dominated them defensively. And then it was kind of iffy after the touchdown and the offense. You know, it was a question mark with Teddy Bridgewater and how healthy was he, but you sure didn't want the other guy out there. So you're like, whatever, we'll do it fine. And then, you know, the offense comes to life and you have a big run from guess who, Javonte Williams again, and a stiff arm from Teddy. Like he was, I don't even know who
on Joey Bosa. Like, I mean, not Bosa. Yeah, yeah. Not just, you know, not some little cornerback or something like, no, he did it on Bosa.
So yeah, just a wild outcome for the Broncos again. And yet again, they're in this weird position of, man, if they win again next week, they're in first place, but oh, it's the Chiefs. And it's like, you cannot, this NFL season and the AFC West in particular, you cannot sit here and predict what's going to happen. It's been an absolute nightmare to figure out what's going to happen because, yes, Kansas City is playing better, but they also had to beat Dallas with their defense, not their offense. Yeah. They had to beat them with their defense somehow and barely pulled that off. So there's still issues there. Yes, it's December. Yes, it's at Arrowhead. Things don't look awesome for the Broncos, but every week we say that they show up and they play and they pull off something that you didn't expect. So I have no idea what to expect going into next week, but here they are still in contention and it still keeps basically saying the same story. There's enough players on this roster to do good things. They're not getting steamrolled. They are not the Jets. They are not the Jags. They are not the Seahawks, for goodness sake. The roster is fine. It's competitive. They need a quarterback. They need a good quarterback. They need a leader. They need something to give you that feeling as an organization that we're in it no matter what happens. And they just don't quite have that. It just kind of comes and goes. It's Jekyll and Hyde. So an amazing game. The Chargers have really disappointed here for the last month. So that's, you know, concerning for them, but I think it's awesome for the Broncos and for the rest of the AFC West, because that was the team, right? Oh, here they are. They're going to be the big contenders and they're going to take down the Chiefs for everybody. And now here we are. It's not them. It's the entire league that is right there amongst the playoff contention and nobody knows who's going to win it. So.
And you look at this game, Kansas City, they, even with Patrick Mahomes having a down year for him. Most guys would be thrilled still to have the numbers he has right now. But, I mean, they're the second best offense in the league behind Dallas against a Broncos defense that's ninth in total defense right now. And I think for the first time in a while, I mean, this is a defense with the secondary, with Surtain, with Darby. Kyle Fuller continues to be troubling. At times he looks okay. More often than not, though, he looks like he doesn't know he's supposed to cover and gets burned like toast half the time. You know, and I thought Caden Stearns did a nice job on Sunday stepping in for Jackson. You know, Justin Simmons has started to play up to his contract the last three or four games. And they've got the ability to put pressure up front. They got the linebackers with Young and Baron Browning that can actually cover somebody, cover tight ends, and maybe help to slow down Travis Kelce. They've got certainly the ability with their defensive front I think the Stephen Weatherly pickup from Minnesota has been huge for them. He's coming as a nice situational pass rusher. They're going to have more snaps in the field from Bradley Chubb this Sunday than this past week. And so Malik Reed, the dream killer. I mean, this defense is a defense that has an opportunity to match up with Kansas City and their weapons. You know, and so we'll see how that plays out. But now the question is, it's a Chiefs defense that started to play a whole lot better, and Steve Spagnuolo's kind of turned that unit around, and can Teddy and that offense go into Arrowhead, where he had a brilliant game last year? If you remember, he went into Kansas City and when he's with the Panthers and I think threw for like 341 and played really, really well. Can he have a game like that? Can they? Number one, they got to run the football. Gordon and Pookie have to run the football. And, you know, and that offense, or the beer wagon, as I like to call Javonte Williams, that offensive line's patchwork. Looks like they'll probably have Bowles back. Might get Bobby Massey back this week. But I mean, give them credit for what they did with that offensive line, which was patchwork is being kind. I mean, it was, you had guys coming off the practice squad to play on that offensive line. Rookies like Quinn Miners. And so the difference is probably going to be, can this Broncos offense, what can it do against Kansas City's defense? Because I really think that Denver's defense will have some opportunities against Kansas City.
Yeah, I think so. And it all comes down to, can they run the ball? If they can run the ball, that defense can be porous. If you can get the job done running the ball, I don't think that Denver's going to, try to stretch the field too much on them, although that's what will be available if they can run the ball. But, that's always a double-edged sword, right? Do you set up the pass by running the ball, or do you set up the run by stretching the field and passing the ball? So that's the question. I think, obviously, with Gordon and with Williams and with the patchwork offensive line, go hit them. Go try and hit them in the mouth and run the ball and control the ball. And then I think you're right. I think their defense has some opportunity. If they're watching film of what everybody's done against the Chiefs, they should have a pretty good roadmap on success and how they've done it, and try to make Patrick Mahomes as uncomfortable as they can and make him check it down a lot, and then just be good tacklers after that. So it'll be interesting. I think it's, 3 weeks ago, that looked like a throwaway game. Didn't want to watch it. Don't want to see it. But all of a sudden, it's got some legs, and obviously it got flexed into the night game too. So that'll be fun. I don't think Bridgewater will be scared to be in Kansas City or deer in the headlights. That's the nice part about Teddy Bridgewater, is he's pretty much been there and done that. He seems to be a pretty cool cucumber. So I think that'll help the Broncos more than anything to have a guy that can just kind of execute a game plan, keep them calm, and stay in that game and see if you can't win it and win it late in Arrowhead. That would be a massive win, one of the biggest wins for the Broncos since the Super Bowl, obviously. Well,
and this will be a game that'll help George Payton gauge, the future of Vic Fangio, too. I mean, this is, another week where these are the games you have to win. If you're Vic, the Chargers game, well, those games you really had to win. And, now they go to Kansas City where they've lost 11 straight. Patrick Mahomes has never lost to the Broncos. Think about that. He's never lost to Denver. Last time Denver beat Kansas City, they beat Alex Smith when Peyton Manning was the quarterback. So they have some history clearly on their side, But I also think this is a Broncos defense that is in probably the best position to deal with the weapons that Kansas City has. And it's a Kansas City offense that while second best in the league, just have not looked as good as they have in years past.
Yep, totally agree. They have an opportunity here, and it's a big one. So we'll see if the whole staff, including Fangio and Shurmur and everybody else, can come up with a game plan.
All right, Beetle. Talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Talk to you later.
This is the Davis and Beetle Podcast.